Hi, everybody. It's Amy Selbach, and welcome to the 20 Seconds of Insane Courage podcast. 20 Seconds of Insane Courage is an exploration of moments that have the power to transform us and change the trajectory of our lives forever. It's an exploration of those moments in which the cross-section of courage, intuition, and fear impact our personal destinies. These are actions which may seem like insanity in the moment, but on the contrary, feel totally in sync with what we know to be true. In these moments, we often reestablish our connection to ourselves and our real purpose. These conversations highlight the fact that it doesn't take months, years, or even days to save or change your life. Sometimes all it takes is trusting yourself in a single moment, and these moments become our story. I'm so excited for our guest today. Please have a listen and let me know what you think. I am so excited for my guest today, Louise Glendon. Lou and I met a couple years back at a digital marketing conference here in San Diego, and I just loved her from the moment I met her. She is so humble despite growing such a wildly successful business. After a long, successful career in the military, Lou realized that the military path no longer fit her desire to raise a family. She picked up a camera and it was love at first click. After building out a successful photography business that was taking up way too many weekends, she turned her sights to building an online empire that would allow her to spend more time with her three kids. She loved the strategies behind digital marketing and loved teaching other moms and entrepreneurs how to take great photos. She now has a super successful online education company that gives photography courses of all kinds to entrepreneurs and moms so that they can ditch photo shame and take magical photos for their business and family. Lou is such an incredible, savvy entrepreneur and mom of three, and I just love this conversation where you learn more about how she does it all and maintain her sanity while having her successful business, which is Love Click Grow. Have a listen and let me know what you think in the comments. Hi, Lou.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
It's so nice to be talking to you. And I know that you're in Australia doing this on a Saturday morning. So I really appreciate it.
That is totally fine. And look, it's not too early. Sometimes being Australia, we do things like really early, but to line up with US, but we're all good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is my happy hour. It's Friday at 4 p.m. for me. So
love it.
This is a great way to spend Friday afternoon. Lou, can you just give us a little summary of what you are up to in the world?
Definitely. So I run Click Love Grow, and you know, really short version is that we teach women how to take photos they love. And I guess it came about because I was a photographer for a little while and I found the online world, and I just thought, what kind of opportunity is there for me to transition from the business I was running that was very service-based to be able to help more people? And that's what we do now. So I have online courses. We only have women in our community, which is something I really love. And so we teach courses to moms, because quite often lots of us have a baby, buy an expensive camera, but we don't know how to get the most out of it. So we help women take photos they love. And then I also help women in business to, again, take photos not only of their products and services, which seems like the really obvious thing, but also how to use photography and imagery in their content and how to use it to engage their audiences and share stories about what they're doing in business so that they can kind of be more authentic and stand out, you know, because the world of business is so crazy and online is so busy. And I have this thing about stock photos. So I'm trying to help people, you know, own their own content and not have to rely on stock photography. So we have courses around that. And we also have a really big community that kind of leads people into our courses, but that's something else that I really love. And we run a lot of challenges, and yeah, it's lots of fun being in the online world and combining it with photography.
Awesome. Well, as you know, I fall into both of those categories. I'm a business owner and I'm a mom with an expensive camera that I don't know how to use.
Which is amazing places, right? So
yeah, and I travel all over the world and never get any amazing pictures of it. So
oh, I bet you do, Amy.
your product is perfect for me. Lou, can you just tell us a little bit about a time that you experienced 20 seconds of insane courage in your life and that it totally changed your trajectory?
Yes. Okay. So one of the things I left out of my really quick intro is that I actually spent 13 years in the military. And so when I was 18, I went off to the military academy in Australia. I was in the Air Force as an intelligence officer, which most people have a bit of a giggle at. And I really loved my job. I loved being in the military. And it's definitely formed where I am now. But so my moment, and I don't know how much courage came into this, but it absolutely changed the trajectory of what I was doing. I was like a real go-getter in the military. And I, you know, always had my eye on, you know, what was coming up. And so I, at the time that I was serving, the Australian military was serving overseas in the Middle East. And so I had deployed to the Middle East in support of our aircraft that were flying into Iraq. And we had a really high tempo during that time. We were doing humanitarian missions in, you know, in Asia, and all sorts of things were happening. And so I had returned from a deployment. I was always on training trips overseas, in the US a lot. And then I was due to go back to the Middle East for another 6 months, and I just got engaged. And so this was just our life in the military. It's like constant, you're never at home. But very unexpectedly, 3 weeks before I was due to go off for another 6 month rotation in the Middle East, I found out I was pregnant, and I was really young, and it just completely flipped everything. And so looking back, I can't imagine it being any other way, but it was such a defining moment in changing so many aspects of my life that I don't know how brave I was, but there was definitely a lot of tears and questions and really awkward stuff, because I remember going to my boss's office and I was like, I am so sorry. And like, I know that these things don't always work out and my deployment's in 3 weeks, so I guess we can just wait and see, because I was so naive. And he was looking at me as if I had two heads. And I was like, so I can still maybe go, like, I was in a, you know, on a totally different realm, but it changed everything. You know, after I had my daughter, we decided, okay, let's have another one. And the Air Force was amazingly supportive. They always let me work part-time, but I had to change everything I thought about my career, because I couldn't have the levels of success that I wanted whilst also being the mother that I wanted. There was this real clash. I wasn't willing to go on deployments anymore and leave my kids for that amount of time. I wasn't willing to do my promotion courses that would take, you know, again, would mean leaving for 6 to 8 weeks. So it was really hard to balance that and be the mom that I wanted. And, you know, I was suddenly like, how do I define myself in terms of success if I'm such a like thruster, and I had this plan mapped out? I couldn't reconcile the two anymore. And that's where running my own business came into it.
And so when you transitioned into running your own business from the military, I mean, that's a very distinct difference, right? You are in this organization, yeah, which is very bureaucratic with a lot of red tape, and entrepreneurship is like the Wild West, right? It's a very drastic change. So was there a 20 seconds of insane courage associated with that with that change?
There definitely was. And look, I'm not going to lie, I had such a good setup that I ran my business and worked part-time for quite a long time because my work was so supportive of me. But there came that point, and I very distinctly remember it, and you're totally going to laugh at this, but we had our kids, we had a nanny who lived with us, an au pair, and so my juggle was that I would get up at 6 a.m., do client emails, you know, then we'd go to work. My husband and I worked at the same place, so that was always fun, go to work, and then in lunch breaks I'd be calling clients. So it was just constant pressure on both sides. And also I was a boss at my job, so I always felt like I was letting my team down because I was working part-time and I was a little bit distracted. I felt like I was letting my clients down and I wasn't doing a good job in my business. And then the defining moment came on the way to work one morning and I just burst into tears because honestly, I didn't know what we were going to have for dinner. It was all too much. And that, like, I remember it was like, my husband was like, we'll just get a barbecue chicken. Like, what's the big deal? Why are you crying? And I was like, you don't understand. I cannot do all of these things. Like, I just can't. And he looked at me and he was like, that's it. You have to leave your job, Louise. Like, you can't be like pussyfooting around trying to do both these things, kind of keep it safe. And it was in that moment that I was like, oh my goodness, you're right. Like, I can't, I have to make this decision. And so, again, I totally took the safe way out. I had long service leave, which I don't know if you have that in the US, but in Australia, every 10 years you build up like 3 months worth of leave, and I hadn't taken it. So I was like, okay, let's do it. So I remember I went on long service leave and my business, just having that sole focus of, I got to sit down at my desk, like my work desk, sorry, my office work for myself desk. And my business just took off. Like, I started making a lot of money. And so I thought, well, that's it. And I went back to work and I knew that I would have to tell them in the first 5 minutes that I was leaving after my 3 months ran out, because I knew if I stayed, I'd feel obligated and I'd get back into it and I'd, you know, be like wanting to sink my teeth into work stuff. So I walked in and like took a deep breath and I was like, I'm not coming back. They're like, well, yeah, we figured. It was pretty obvious to us, Louise. But when you join the military at 18, it becomes, you know, you're so institutionalized and it's such a safety net. It was so hard to leave and like rip away that safety. But it's just been, I haven't looked back, honestly. It's been fantastic.
I love that story. I actually have a very similar story. I was sitting in my corporate job and I was volunteering on the side for an aid organization and they suddenly got funded after the 2004 tsunami to do this aid relief effort in Indonesia. And I remember I got a call and they said, we need a communications marketing director to lead this effort. And by the way, we have no money to pay you. But I remember just feeling like so alive, like, oh my God, like the opportunity to go to Indonesia and help people. And, you know, and then there I was under my corporate fluorescent lights. And I was thinking to myself, like, if I don't get up in the next 5 minutes and say that I'm quitting, I could think about this for 24 hours and the response could be totally different. And so I did the exact same thing as you. I'm like, I know I have to say this right now. It's now or never. And I just got up and went into my HR director and quit.
So that's fantastic. I love that. And it is scary. And you're right. It's almost like you have to rip that Band-Aid off quickly because you could come up with a million reasons why it's not a good idea to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is what happens when you think about something. And I think, you know, so often we ignore that experience of having that, you know, intuitive hit, like this is the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do, but we override, right? We spend a lot of time overriding and rationalizing when really, you know, if we just listen to the signs, like our body is telling us, all signs are pointing in the same direction, but we do have the tendency sometimes to just completely ignore that and numb out to
so
it.
True.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So in the decision that you, in the moment that you made the decision to go full force with this business, it was already kind of set up and successful, at that time. But going back to the 3 months before when you said, okay, I'm going to take the safe way out and I'm going to just, you know, take a leave. It sounds like it was just one of those moments where it was a knowing and it wasn't necessarily well researched. Like you didn't have a business plan or all that kind of stuff in place. It doesn't sound like from your story. Is that correct?
So I did. I guess prior to taking the leave, my business was pretty well established and I probably didn't tell people in my business that I was still working in the Air Force. I was very much putting up the, you know, the front of my business that's solely what I was doing, but I did make a big transition. So when I took the leave, I was working as a boudoir photographer, you know, which seems like a natural transition, military women in their lingerie, but
yeah,
so not obvious, but I really loved it because, you know, the military is quite male dominated. It's very masculine energy. So it was actually really nice to do something that was very feminine and to hold that like intimate space with women while I was capturing the imagery. Anyway, so when I left, I grew that side of my business. So I was able to implement a lot of the marketing campaigns, you know, and learn a lot more about it and start increasing my bookings. But what I did do in that time was actually learn about the online space. And so it was about then that I started my first blog for Click Love Grow. And I definitely wouldn't have had the space, you know, or the brain space to do that before I'd left. So I was growing my existing photography boudoir business in that time, but I also started completely from scratch, Click Love Grow. And it was one of those things like where intuition really did, you know, play a big part of that. And I felt a lot of resistance because, you know, being a photographer, I felt a lot of resistance from, you know, people in the photography industry or other photographers, because I just thought they are just going to hate me. Like, I'm going to be so judged for taking these skills and teaching them to other people, you know, and I had a lot of, ooh, what are they going to think? But yeah, that was a whole new side of business that I really enjoyed learning about and grew from scratch at that point, whilst also growing my boudoir business. And the reason why is because I'm kind of like you. I don't like sitting in the one spot for very long, and I like adventure calls, and I hate the idea of being tied down. And that's what my boudoir business was. It was service-based, and I'd grown it really beautifully, but my husband and I really wanted to move back overseas in a period of time. So the online world was kind of, that was my motivation. And I just had this, you know, intuitive feeling that to go in that direction, because I knew that it would allow us to maintain that traveling lifestyle and be able to move and live wherever we wanted, that I couldn't do with a service-based business.
Got it. And that is a totally different model. So you really pivoted within how many years did you pivot into just the kind of the course-based online business?
So I'm trying to think of how long the period was, but I'm going to say that within 18 months, I completely shut down my service-based business because we moved overseas. So it was probably 12 months of actually running the courses, because it took about 6 months from starting the first blog and kind of fleshing out the ideas and running it by people. But I launched my first round in the December of that year. So I'd started the blog in July. And it completely exceeded my expectations. Like, I sold, you know, well over 100 of these courses, which was really exciting. And then it continued to grow through the following year. And it was the following year we decided, okay, let's do it. Let's move overseas. So we made the decision pretty early in the year, because we traveled to the US and my husband started talking to companies. And then we had the job offer, I think, about September. And that's when I, you know, really had to close the books on my service-based business of boudoir, because we left here in the November and left the country in December. Yeah, and that was it. It was purely Click Love Grow at that point. And that felt a little bit scary, because that was a big chunk of my income that I was, you know, closing down. But it felt nothing felt righter. Like, it was just, you know, exactly what I had, you know, what I visualized, I guess, as being the ultimate.
Yeah. And what was and when you started the online portion of your business, did you start with was the blog the main thing you started with, or did you get the course up and running right away? Like, what were the very first steps as you entered kind of the online world with your brand?
That's a really good question. So it definitely started with a blog, but it wasn't so much, oh, I'm going to start a photography blog because I love talking about it. It was always very strategic. I started a blog and started building my list because I knew that I wanted to sell the courses. So it just takes a while for all these things to come, you know, to come into play. So I started the blog and I worked with someone, you know, to get my website up. And so I started blogging kind of every now and then, and I'd let people know that's what I was doing. But it took me, I'd say about the September, I started getting serious about, you know, deciding what I was going to blog about and building my list and doing the newsletters and things. And then as I came up to that December, I put a timeline on myself because I thought, well, it's Christmas, you know, this is the perfect time to launch it. And then I did kind of a launch of what I knew about launching, which was not much at that stage, but yeah, it was very much using the audiences that I already had. And I love to talk to people about, you know, everyone talks about list building, but when you're brand new, your list essentially is the networks of people that you already have, you know and that you're friends with. And it's totally fine to share new offerings with them if, you know, if it resonates. And I think I probably collaborated with a couple of people who shared it with their audiences and, you know, it grew from there.
Right. And then in terms of list building, and I know everybody's talking about that right now, the first steps to list building were your own network. And then what was the next step after that? Like, how did you decide to, you know, continue to grow your list?
Yes. So after that, I reached out and collaborated with some other businesses that whose audiences I knew would really like my product. And so I went in two directions with that. So I partnered with a couple of businesses that taught business. So one lady in particular, she was fantastic because she already taught content marketing. So I was like the next piece that went beautifully with what she was teaching, being the photography side. And then I also, this was back in the day when Facebook had amazing organic reach, but I worked with a couple, and one in particular, you know, kind of mummy bloggers, I guess, or women that had great, you know, really big mom followings. And they could just share it for me and the sales would come because, you know, that organic reach was so great. And so they definitely helped build my list in the initial stage because they were, you know, sharing with their audience as affiliates, of course. So right. They were making payments off they were earning affiliate sales. And so that was probably the strategy that took me to that next step. And then, of course, we transitioned. Now we rely predominantly on Facebook ads and using funnels to bring people in.
Right. Right. I know it's so interesting if you started in this industry right now or if you're starting in this industry, what was it, 6, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
And then you mentioned a little bit about your fears starting this business. It's interesting that you said, I was worried what other photographers would think about me sharing this information, sharing these industry trade secrets with, you know, the rest of the world, so that you were basically empowering other people to be able to do photography themselves. Did you have any other fears in coming out with an online business?
So I feel like now I've worked through so much of this, right? Like they say that there's no better personal development than running business.
Right.
And so it is funny thinking back, but I definitely held myself back in so many ways because I was afraid of what people would think. I was like, what will the people I went to the military academy think? Like, I'm doing this, which is totally different, or it's like creative. It's not military or structured. And then the photography side, like a lot of photographers like to complain about the oversaturation of photographers. And so I did, you know, definitely think, oh, like photographers are going to, you know, hate me. But most of all, it was a lot of fear of visibility stuff. Because I worked in Intel, my whole career was don't share anything about yourself. Like, you know, really maintain this professional presence. Don't give out personal information. You know, it's drilled into you so heavily that I really had to overcome this fear of putting out anything about myself. And in online business, it's so important to authentically, you know, present yourself so that people can get to know you. So there was a lot of fear around the visibility and just putting myself out there. And then there's, of course, the fear of failure. Like, what if it tanks? And it's mortifyingly embarrassing, you know? So yeah, lots of different fears around that.
And then, okay, so when those fears came up, how did you find yourself, for example, let's take the visibility piece, because this relates to, you know, a lot of what I talk about in building a visible brand and building a more confident brand. And this is, you know, one of the scariest things in starting to market yourself online, whatever kind of business you have, right? People just fear like, oh, sounding sleazy, sounding self-promotional, yada, yada, yeah. Doing more video, doing more Facebook Lives, all that kind of stuff. How did you get over it? I mean, how did you kind of like talk yourself into doing the first thing that, you know, was going to make your brand more visible? What was the talk you were having with yourself? Or did you have a process for accessing some courage to do those things?
That's a really good question. So I think for me, it was very much layered. So a lot of it came from just doing one thing. And then once you've done that one thing, just do another thing. So it's almost like, you know, that the more you do it, the less scary it becomes. So it is just taking that first step. And then the other two things that I found really helpful is one was to actually meet and talk to real people and people that, you know, were taking your courses or that were in your community or interested in what you're doing. Because when you actually talk to them face to face and you see how interested they are or how much your product is resonating, it makes it so much easier when you get back behind that computer screen. Because when you're sharing to a computer screen, you are imagining the worst of everything, like people, you know, turning up their noses, or which people just scroll by if they don't care. But of course, you're imagining the outrage or, you know, the negative reactions. So I found actually getting amongst real people totally helped subside a lot of the fear, because I was like, okay, what I'm doing is, you know, is resonating. And then of course the other one was working. I worked with a business coach and joined a mastermind of other women running these businesses. And there's nothing like having a bit of a push from someone to just get it done and to, you know, just start doing the video and start sharing more things. So I had a really good kick up the bum business coach, and she made a really big difference as well.
I think those are two pieces of such good advice. First of all, the piece about it when you're, you know, when you need to reconnect with your value and your product and know that people are going to find this valuable and interesting, get in front of real people. I mean, that's really, really the key. And when you go too long behind a computer screen, I think it's so easy to forget that. And also a lot of entrepreneurs are moms that are maybe re-entering the workforce and they've been out of it for a long time and they kind of forget like, oh, I used to add such tremendous value here, there, or wherever. But you kind of forget that when you've been, you know, out of the scene. So I just love that advice. And of course, yeah, entering a group where you get some accountability towards what you're building. And you also realize from that group, nobody loved to do this at first, you know, like there's a couple people, you know, if you're really extroverted and you love the limelight, yes. But for most of us, that's not the case. And doing this stuff and the, you know, doing the self-promotional stuff in the beginning is, you know, kind of feels like you're ripping off a Band-Aid. And then once it's off, you're like, ah, okay, breathe a sigh of relief.
Definitely. And I think getting feedback too, because there comes a point where you're always scared initially about the offer and what you're doing. But the more that you get positive feedback or that you're really listening to what people are saying, that authenticity is, it feels natural. Like it doesn't feel like you're promoting anymore because you know the value that it gives to people, and that becomes a lot easier. But for me, you know, the self-promotion stuff was terrifying because again, you know, growing up in the military or growing up as an adult in the military, it's not commercial or business or about you at all. So that was a really interesting flip. And now I feel really comfortable with it. But yeah, it is a transition for sure.
It's so good to know that you can go from feeling terrified of that step to really comfortable.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's a big leap. And I think a lot of people out there are going, will I ever feel that way? Or is this always going to feel like completely painful? So that's great to know. And then Lou, can you just describe the role of intuition and inner guidance in your life? Because it sounds like you've had a few moments where you've just like kind of intuitively known this is what I need to do next. And do you have any kind of again, process or methodology for tapping into intuition or knowing whether it's intuition or something else?
I love that. So another thing that I've discovered in business is the world of woo. Mm-hmm. And I feel like starting my business has actually been so valuable to learn all these things about trusting our own intuition and using, you know, skill sets to sit and be present and allow us to make these decisions. I don't feel like I tapped into that very much at all prior to running and growing my business, but also being exposed to so many amazing women in business who teach this or who use this. For me, I was very naive or not very open, I guess, to, you know, even considering using a skill like this in my professional life or in my business life. So now, yes, I very much trust my own intuition. And I guess the processes that I would use is one thing I've learned and loved is like, is it sometimes if you're not sure, like, is it a solid no? You know, you can kind of ask yourself some questions and sometimes looking for the affirmative can be a little bit confusing, but you can pretty quickly work out if something's a solid no, like if you shouldn't do it or if you don't want to do it. Usually for me, it's don't want to.
It's funny.
Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's funny that you said that because, you know, the study of human behavior and human psychology actually tells us that we have a lot easier time figuring out what we don't want than what we do want. So I think you're on the right track completely with that and you're scientifically backed.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I guess prior to like me having a self-awareness about that intuition stuff, I guess it was something I did always rely on, but I didn't have a good understanding of how it all, you know, how it all fell into play, but maybe it's about being a mother as well and just getting older as a woman and being more comfortable in trusting my intuition about things. And I was not a really young mom, but I was a pretty young mom in terms of my peer group. I definitely did not know anyone with kids, but I felt like as soon as I had my daughter, my confidence just like grew. I felt like I could walk into even professional circumstances and I was like, I've got this. I'm a mom. Like, I just had a baby. I can totally handle all this stuff now. But I did have to rely on my intuition a lot because I didn't have, you know, I wasn't watching my friends have babies, but I actually think it was a good thing because by the time I had my second, I was like, I'd been surrounded by other moms and I learned all the things I was supposed to worry about. Whereas with my first, I was in this beautiful space of just doing what I thought was right without all that noise from the outside.
Oh, that's so interesting because I feel like it's a little bit twofold, right? Becoming a mom can make you feel, for some people, it makes them feel a little bit more off kilter and more insecure. But it's so nice to hear the stories where it just makes you feel like a total badass. You're just like, dude, I got this. I'm a mom. Hello.
Well, I also think, so I got, you know, people send you flowers when you have a baby. And I was like, oh my God, now I know why everyone sends you flowers. Like, I totally deserve that. Like, I earned those flowers. Yeah, for me, it was a really surprising experience, but a great one. And I recently had another baby. So I've had kids before smartphones. And then I had a pregnancy with a smartphone. Oh my goodness, the difference. Because before smartphones, you couldn't Google everything and find like threads and find all these things to worry about. But when I had my third baby, I was on my smartphone all the time and I should have known better, but you can't help it.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny. I actually had the same experience becoming a mom and it was a nice point in my life with my business as well. I started a business when I was pregnant with Ella. And so, and the business was going really well. And so it was a very confidence building period for me too, I have to say, but I know it's not that way for everybody, but it is nice to know that there's some stories out there like that. let me ask you a little bit about, so speaking of being a badass, and coming into this like, you know, stage of greater maturity, Do you have a moment where you have stood up for yourself, whether it be in your business or whether it be around, you know, setting boundaries in your business? I love to hear about those moments because I think that it's one of the things that I hear most about from entrepreneurs building their business. It's a real constant struggle around boundaries and maybe standing up for yourself or not standing up for yourself where you should, and that being a confidence eroding thing potentially.
That's a really good question. So it's true, like boundaries, you know, as we learn, and I think the longer we go through business, it's almost like we have to implement them by default because we learn and get burnt. But one of the areas where it's really been applicable in my business is, I guess, around the community side. So I have a community is a big part of my business, both in the, you know, the free, like in the marketing side, we nurture and grow communities. But then when we teach our courses, it's actually done live in a community setting. And so I guess when we start down this path, the goal is to help people and we're putting out all this content and we want to keep everyone happy. And I'm a total people pleaser. You know, I like everyone to be, you know, positive and enjoying things and being really happy. And I guess there came a point for me where I realized that there's a lot more power in setting the boundaries and keeping space safe for the people that really matter. So the audience that you're really attuned with and the people that are your clients and your customers, instead of letting it be a free-for-all and keeping, you know, everyone happy and then it kind of deteriorating and, you know, not having control, I found that it was so important for me to make some kind of scary steps around enforcing boundaries to protect the space that was the learning environment and a place where people felt safe sharing their photos or photos of their kids. And that felt really uncomfortable for me because, you know, I'm always happy with rules, but it was more than that. It was about creating a space and really holding that space for people. And it was, initially that fear came from, well, I don't want to exclude people, right? Or I don't want to leave people out. But in some cases in business you do. And it's not that you're leaving people out. It's just that you're elevating the space and the comfort for the people that really matter in your business, which are the ones that are your clients and customers.
That's such an amazing reframe. You know, it's not that you're excluding people. It's that you're elevating the community. You're elevating the space. I love that. Can you describe a moment in which your intuition maybe told you something, but you ignored it and what the outcome was?
Oh, so I can't think of a really big one, Amy, but I don't know if this happens to you, but I always remember the little ones.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, you know, when you're standing, it'll be something like I'm standing, leaving the door and there'll be a voice that says like, grab the keys or check the window or something. And I always remember when I don't follow my intuition and then something bad happens. It's like, wow, your little voice was telling you. So I actually try to listen a lot now because even if I think it's crazy and even if I'm like, oh, this is just my head telling me stupid things, like I'll go and do whatever it is I just like paused on or had a double thought about, because I've learned on so many times now for little things I didn't listen to. And it turned out badly. Like I got locked out or I ended up somewhere with no money or, you know what I mean?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I have a big example of this and I'll tell you what it is. This is an interesting one because we were sitting in Africa. My husband and I were both, you know, running our own businesses over there. And I kept saying to my husband when I was pregnant, you know, I just feel like something bad's going to happen to our family. I can't get it out of my head. I feel like something bad's going to happen to my family. And this persisted after I had Ella and for another little while. And when Ella was about 2 months old, my wedding rings were stolen and I was delighted because I kept saying to my husband, maybe that's the bad thing that I thought was going to happen because I've just had this overwhelming fear that something bad's going to happen to our family. And my husband was like devastated when my wedding rings were stolen. And I was like, dude, that's all it is. It's fine. We're fine. We can handle wedding rings. Who cares about those things? And my husband was like, Amy, this is terrible. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's good. Maybe that was it. But sure enough, the problem persisted even after the wedding rings were stolen. And I just kept saying to my husband, I don't know what's going on, but I just feel something terrible is going to happen to my family. I kept telling him we have to leave Africa. And funnily enough, 4 months in to Ella being born, the restaurants that we owned in a shopping mall in Nairobi were in a gnarly terrorist attack. And I mean, it's a terrible example, but, and there's, to be honest, there's nothing I could have done about it. Like, there's absolutely nothing, but it's just an example of like a big way where intuition is telling you something and you kind of just, you know, my husband thought I was hormonal and recently pregnant and recently had a baby and da 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 da. And he's like, you're just worrying for nothing. And I'm like, I just can't get this feeling out of my head. But I've actually had lots of big moments like that where I just knew and it was something pretty gnarly at the end of it.
That's crazy. And it is easy to second guess yourself when people say that or you know, you don't want to believe it. But now that you've said that, I do remember I had a you're going to laugh at this. I had a car accident because I hit a kangaroo.
that's a real Aussie story.
Yeah, I know. It couldn't get more Australian. But I had just landed from a training exercise back in Sydney and I was driving to see my now husband, my boyfriend at the time. And the whole time I was driving in the car, I was the same as you. I was like, something's going to go wrong. Something's happening, going to happen. I shouldn't be driving. I need to pull over. And of course, I didn't want to. I just wanted to get there. And it was about 10 o'clock at night. And I was going really fast. In my head, I can't convert Ks to miles right now. But
yeah, that's okay.
But I just remember this kangaroo's face, like looking at me through the windscreen was awful.
Oh, my gosh.
I really destroyed my car and it was really dangerous. But I had that feeling of foreboding the whole entire 3-hour trip. Thinking, oh, something's going to go wrong. And it did.
I know. It's really interesting. I mean, sometimes there is nothing we can do about it, but in the instances where there is, it's good to, it's good to act and tune into it.
Absolutely.
Lou, I just am curious about, I just love talking about kind of like moments of courage and moments of power in people's lives. And I just am curious how these have become part of your story in your brand and how you potentially use some of these moments as an entrepreneur to showcase who you are and be more authentic in your brand.
So, in fact, I have a really recent example. And for me, I think it comes from leading in a positive way. And it comes back to, I guess, the community or the industry that I work in. And so I teach photography in the foundational stages of it being something that people can love and enjoy. I don't necessarily go straight into teaching photography for business. Of course, I do that, you know, as people come through our courses. But for me, it's very much, you know, teaching, you know, moms and women to get joy and love the photos that they're taking rather than, okay, let's learn this skill and become a business person and become a photographer. But the natural flow of people is that they go down that path. And there can be a lot of negative instances around people assuming that there's too many photographers and they can't get work because there's other photographers, you know, that kind of scarcity mentality. And so I love to be the reframe, you know, particularly in my community and stepping up and saying that, you know, it doesn't need to come from a place of fear, like, or judgment. You know, we're holding the space for you here to make mistakes and learn from them and not to tear each other down, but, you know, lift them up. And I find that a lot of people are all about, well, if you have to learn, you have to be brutally honest with people. And if you can't have a thick skin and learn, then forget about it. Like you shouldn't even be asking the question or you shouldn't be putting yourself out there. But I totally disagree with that because in the people that do come and do our courses, the rule is that if you're giving feedback and helping people, you put it in a sandwich, right? Like you tell them something they've done well, you layer in the areas of growth, and then you finish it off with some encouragement. And so I'm often finding myself stepping up and having to present to the bigger community that we're providing something different and it doesn't have to be this negative, you know, confidence sucking experience. And if people you know, want to provide support in the community that way, then they can leave because we won't tolerate that. And again, that took a lot of courage in the first instances because I didn't want to rock the boat or, you know, not include people in this community or conversation. But it's my job to, you know, like we said before, like to elevate the people that do want to learn in a more positive setting or have an experience. And so I found, like, yesterday, do you know Like for Likes, where people share their Facebook page and they're like, come and like my Facebook page and I'll like yours?
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, yeah. I've seen people do that a bit in groups sometimes, but yeah.
So, well, this morning I woke up and my group had gone crazy. Like, I have never seen anything like this. People just jumped on the bandwagon. And of course, I was asleep. So I wake up to like hundreds of these, and then everyone's complaining about it. And oh my goodness. But it was one of those moments where I was like, right, okay. And everyone's like, you know, trying to tell people to stop doing it. It's not good for your business, it's counterproductive. But it was one of those, you know, leadership moments where I could delete them all. And I'm like, it's okay. Like, I totally understand why you're doing this and that when you're wanting to grow, like, it's an easy payoff and you see the numbers. But, you know, these are the reasons why it doesn't work. These are some things that you can do instead. But I'm not shaming anyone saying that they're stupid for doing that. I'm just acknowledging that, okay, I know where you're coming from. I know what you want to achieve, but let's not make this uncool for everyone. And here's where you can focus instead to get those results without resorting to driving everyone in the group crazy.
Yeah. Awesome. I love how you kind of like found a way to deliver that information in a positive way without shame. Cause I see some Facebook group leaders being perfectly fine with shaming their community and shaming people who have done certain things in it. Like, nobody's trying to do, I mean, by and large, everybody's intentions are good. And so when I see that, it just makes me cringe. Lou, you've built such a successful online business. And I'm just wondering what tips you have for someone who wants to build a strong brand of their own in any world. But, you know, you can talk about the online world because that's what you know. And I think the online world is literally relevant for every business on the planet right now.
Oh, I definitely think so. So thank you for saying nice things about my business. So I think for me, I have just been really, really consistent. And even when it's bored me, even when I feel like everyone's heard this before, it's not true. Everyone hasn't heard it before. And I think it's so easy for us to look at our business and think, oh, I have to like tear it down and rebuild it, or I have to change everything, because you feel like, you know, people may have heard it all before, but you're always coming across new audiences. And I think having consistency of message is so powerful in a brand, because we might be saying it over and over and again, but people, you know, need to see and hear things quite a few times, obviously, for it to you know, for them to make decisions. Or, you know, we're always getting in front of new people. And so for me, it's just been continuity of message, consistency of what I'm offering. And my product has really worked, right? Like, people enjoy it. I know they get great results. And so I've definitely been tempted to just think, oh, I've run it too many times. But no, I've just held steady and kept offering it and offering it and offering it. And, you know, over time, that we've definitely grown because people know exactly what we offer. We know exactly what our brand stands for, and the message is always the same.
It's so interesting that you said that, because I'm running a brand incubator right now with a group of women, and one of the girls in the in my incubator was worried about this exact same thing. And someone else in the group, actually it wasn't me, had the advice for her. You know, we forget that we're surrounding ourselves with this kind of messaging, because we're the experts in a certain realm. But the people that are coming to you for these services are not as immersed as you are in all this information. You know, they're coming in blind sometimes. And so to assume that they've heard it and assume that it's all been done and assume that it's overdone, you know, is an assumption that can really set you back in your business. And same thing with having to feel like everything that you create has to be so original and so, you know, so one of a kind. And I do believe in, you know, creating original products and not plagiarizing other people's. But there's a great book out there called Steal Like an Artist. And I don't know if you've read it, but it really sets people free from the notion that that you have to create something completely from scratch. And it's basically saying there is no originality in the world right now. Everything has already been done. And so, you know, putting that extra pressure on yourself that you have to create something that's so original is just going to hold you back. And it's more about, you know, borrowing influences and then reconstituting and reconstructing things so that they become our own. And that becomes the uniqueness in our brand and our business.
Well, it's so, so true. And I even think like, excuse me. So lots of us, particularly where the realm I'm in, like people could go and teach themselves or they could Google, you know, and spend the time. But on one side, it's that you're taking away all the extra, just giving them what they need, you know, condensing it or presenting it in a way that makes sense. But the other thing is some people just want to hear it from you because, you know, finally they found someone that talks the way they do, or finally they found someone that thinks like they do and the information just, you know, is really easily absorbed. And I have this example so, so many times, and people in our community, they'll say, well, can you teach this or can you teach that? And I will say, well, there's this great course over here or there's this article, and people will literally say, oh yeah, I know, but I want you to tell me. And on the one hand, I'm flattered. On the other hand, I'm like, no, I can't create anymore. But it's so interesting, and it's so true to that point that it's not necessarily about the unique idea that we have, but it's that we're presenting it in a way that's accessible to the people that really resonate with us. And so that's where the value comes from, because, you know, I always think like if you just, I explain the things in my courses like I would to a friend or someone sitting in front of me, and I'm taking all the technical stuff and I'm just explaining it like a normal person to me. And I always had that experience before where when things clicked for me, I thought, why didn't someone just tell me like that? You know, it seems like they're explaining it so complicated or over the top. And that applies for anyone in business. Like you resonate with people because you love the way that they deliver information. And so, yeah, it doesn't have to be original. It's just that you have a way of presenting it that's going to make sense to people that are drawn to you.
It's so true. That is such a good point. I mean, having a fitness studio for 6 years, it's interesting. You know, I developed a training program and taught other instructors how to teach exactly what I was teaching. It was all my material, all my methodology, all my, you know, the way I cue, the way, you know, to choreograph, da 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 da. But some people just refused to take other people's classes. They're like, I only want your class. Yeah. And vice versa. Some people might not have liked my class. Some people might have liked somebody else's class, but it's the same class. They're getting the same workout, but they're so attached to, you know, the delivery of the way somebody does it. It's the same information, but they want it, you know, they have it in mind who resonates with them, period.
And it's also who they like and how they make, how feel. And I think for fitness, that's so, so true, because you'd always rather, you know, spend time with someone that makes you feel good, no matter what the exact workout is, than someone, you know, that didn't make you feel good.
Exactly. And what I used to tell my instructors when I train them, and this applies to business, it's really a metaphor for, you know, entrepreneurship and especially in the, you know, course and information delivery world, you're lending somebody your energy for however amount of time, and you're lending somebody your confidence. You are a cheerleader for that person. The exercise, the content of what you're teaching is actually so much less important than the energy and the confidence and all the other kind of subconscious things that you're giving them during that transmission of and during that exchange. And it's an energetic exchange. And that is the most important piece of it all, basically.
I love that so much. I'm so going to take that and absorb it. I really like that.
Yeah, it's so true. And it really, really applies, I think, in what we're talking about in this industry. Okay, so Lou, last couple of questions here before we wrap up. Do you have a daily routine that keeps you on course?
Oh, so I have three children.
Did I mention I had three children?
Yes. I wish I was great at routines. And in fact, I do always laugh, you know, when you follow like business people, particularly men that don't have children, they're like, start your day like this and start your day like this. I'm like, yeah. I wish.
You're like, yeah, right.
So I do have my set work hours. So I have a nanny for my youngest because he's only 2.5 and super cute. My eldest kids are really great. They kind of, you know, make their lunches and walk to school. So I have my set work days. But even then, there's always other things. So the short answer is I have a loose routine. But for me, it's about finding like the space to work. And I mean time space, not physical space. So I just need to have those blocked out times, and whether it's the same day every week or whatever. But yeah, I really can't dive into my business unless I have those cut out things. And I also get a blow dry every week. That's part of my routine. And I say this not from a pampering self-care point of view, but I have kind of crazy hair. And if it's not done, I actually don't do videos, or I avoid doing some of the visibility stuff. So I get it done so that I don't have any excuses to not be showing up as frequently as I should be, because I can't use my hair as an excuse.
You are the second person I've heard that from this week. No joke. Just for the sole purpose of doing video. I heard another entrepreneur say that this week. That a blowout is a regular part of the routine. That's so interesting. Totally. And it's so such a good reminder, right? Whatever that little niggly thing is that could be holding you back from being more visible in your brand, just get that done. Right? Yeah. I mean, that actually seems like a little trivial piece of advice and a trivial part of your routine, but I think it's pretty huge.
I don't think it's trivial at all. And even from a mindset point of view, it's almost like stepping up that next level. It's like, right, okay, I'm going to be looking the way, you know, schmick enough to do videos. But I also feel, I give myself a little high five inside, because I'm like, oh, I've made this level where I can get a blow dryer every week. If you had said that to me when I was, you know, working my military job and chasing little kids, like, oh, one day you'll get a blow job every week, I would have rolled my eyes and thought that was so crazy, or I wouldn't have been able to imagine that lifestyle. So for me, it's a lifestyle piece too. It's kind of a, you know, this is what I've created through my business.
Yeah. And do you consider that you work full time? With three kids, I don't imagine how you can.
So no, there is no way that I look back now to when I did used to work full time to when I had two school age kids, but throwing another baby in the mix, whoa.
Yeah.
I think I'd forgotten, you know, how much time a toddler takes. So no, I have one full day and two half days that I have care. And then I definitely work in other little spits and spurts in between. And if I've got really big projects on, I might get an extra daycare day, or I'll say to my husband, you know, you need to come in, take over so I can work. So no, at this stage, I do feel like I would like to work more, but I know my little one will be starting school soon enough. So I'm in this real balance of, you know, wanting to enjoy that time. So definitely part-time here.
Got it. And then last question. How do you keep it going? Like, how do you fuel your personal evolution? Do you have a toolkit that kind of fuels you, that keeps you going after being, how long have you been in business, Lou?
5-6 years now.
Yeah. So that's a long time. And I know a lot of people start to burn out like in year 1, 2, 3, let alone 6 years. So how do you kind of fuel that and fuel your evolution as a personally and as a business owner?
So I'm definitely an extrovert. So for me, a lot of it comes from in-person things. So even though we work in this online business, for me, I have to get out and be with people and be with other business owners to get a lot of that energy. So I try and schedule in, you know, the conferences where I've, you know, met you twice and had lots of fun. If I didn't do those things, I think I would find it a lot more difficult. And so, you know, the mastermind retreats with women, and it doesn't even have to be talking about business, but just knowing that, you know, being in the space with other women going through the same kind of business stuff, that makes a really big difference to me. And then one of the other things is sometimes it's so easy to run with the negative and be like, oh, you know, no one's enjoying this, or what am I even doing? So I always like to ground myself by giving service to my community and to my students. So if I'm ever feeling that way, I will take extra time to go in and give love and support to them, to cheer people on, to, you know, answer questions or be helpful. And that always works in helping to fuel and re-energize me. And then lastly, I have this thing called a smile file, which one of my coaches taught with me really early on. And so, you know, those times where people send you really lovely messages and right. They write you emails thanking you, they have to go straight to the smile file.
Such a good idea.
Sometimes you just need to go and remind yourself that people are enjoying what you do. And, you know, it's good to have that positive reminders, I guess, for the times that you are feeling a little bit lost, because it does, you know, when you say 5-6 years, I'm like, whoa. But in our, I don't know, in our personal life, like, we love traveling and living in different places, so we're always creating some kind of upheaval in our life. So to me, my business is the stability piece that I can come back to. So I definitely have ups and downs, but overall, you know, I love it. It's always something new to try. Like, I feel like it's a jigsaw puzzle that you never quite figure out, but that's the fun of it. There's always new strategies to try, new things, you know, new offerings. I love it.
Oh my gosh, Lou, I could talk to you for another hour. I just don't want this to end, but I know it's your Saturday and you got three little kiddos running around. I just want to say thank you so much. I'm going to steal your smile file, because I've had something in my incubator that we have a couple exercises that are perfect to put in the smile file. And I used to tell people to, like, when I used to do these in person, I used to say, just keep a box, because we used to hand them to each other in writing. That's how long I've been coaching women entrepreneurs. There was no like digital format of exchange. We actually used to like hand people papers. And I used to tell people to put them keep a little, you know, inspiration box. But I'm definitely love the idea of a smile file.
Well, thank you so much. It's been so much fun to chat to you. And honestly, I'm always happy to escape from my three kids for a little.
I love it. Okay, Lou. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I hope this conversation has inspired you to find your 20 seconds of insane courage, or at least listen more carefully to your own intuition and act. One common thread among really all the entrepreneurs I interview is that they did not build their businesses alone and that they didn't take action alone. If you find yourself needing some support to make your brand, your messaging, and your story more visible to the world and to your dream clients, I wanted to remind you that I'm right here to help, and I'd love to support you. I've been working with entrepreneurs for over 15 years and have 20 years of marketing and communications experience around the world. So I wanted to offer a free brand breakthrough call to all of you listening. All you have to do to book it is go to my website, amyselbach.com/about, and you'll see two buttons halfway down the page and at the very bottom of the page to book that call with me. I look forward to talking to you, and remember, you do not have to find your 20 seconds of insane courage alone.